Hi, everyone. This is Amy DeVita from Top Nonprofits, and thank you for joining us. Today, I'm speaking with Mark Pittman. He's the CEO of Concord Leadership Group, and that group just released a fascinating study called the Nonprofit Sector Leadership Report. Welcome, Mark.
Thanks so much. It's great to be here.
Thank you for joining us. You've got a lot going on right now with this report just coming out. So let's get to the questions that I'm sure the audience has in mind. First of all, can you tell us a little bit about the why, really? You know, what was it that inspired the Concord Leadership Group to really to go on this journey and ask this particular survey?
Great question, and it has been a journey. My wife says that I give the $10 answer when people want a 10-cent answer, so I'll try for $1.50. I won't start with how I was born and raised and all, but the genesis of this study was the last 20 years or so of nonprofit work. I've had these assumptions about leadership, and whether it was as a fundraiser or in leadership at nonprofits, starting a nonprofit, being on the board of nonprofits, or talking to consultants and colleagues and nonprofit leaders about whether it's, well, one of the precipitating comments even this fall was a consultant saying that the biggest problem he sees in nonprofits is insecure CEOs. The insecurity of the executive director or the CEO is causing them to self-sabotage their own success in that of their organization and actually cripple it and make it close doors. And I had seen that, but I'd also heard about people kind of feeling like they're flying by the seat of their pants, having conflicting audiences. A lot of people move into nonprofits, Amy, and are totally surprised by how many audiences they have to perform for. There's the board, who's their boss if they're the executive director. There's also the staff who they have to, and they're kind of aware of the staff. That's what they've seen in other sectors. But then there's the donors and the people they serve. So all of a sudden they're being pulled apart, and the board often is laying on goals to them, and the staff is pushing up goals. And what I wanted to do is take a snapshot of the sector and just see what is it that is going on right now. Not what are the best practices yet? That'll hopefully come later, and we're already collecting stories out of this report. But what, just testing the assumption, is it really that bad in the nonprofit sector? Or is this just part of the myth, the lore that's been developed around leaders? So we set out with a team to do this research that was, we wanted to build on previous research, kind of like a Lego block. We wanted to make sure that it could plug into research by maybe Bridgespan or Third Sector or Compass Point, but it would also stand alone. And I'm sure you've read, there's enough number of studies that are obviously pushing for something and trying to lead people to a certain path. And that's not my style at all. I'm a nerd. I love statistics and research. So I wanted this to be verifiable too. If people were looking at it academically, they'd be able to say, yep, this holds water and this is really going to help my nonprofit.
That is fascinating. And to your point about, you know, it holding water, I see, you know, that the methodology included surveying more than 1,000 nonprofits. Can you shed a little more light on how many organizations, maybe the types, and with regard to sizes?
Sure. We were really pleased with that. We had a lot of partner organizations, including the State Association, the Association of Fundraising Professionals. We also tested the survey questions. It was a 38-question survey, and we tested them against people in the field, practitioners in the field, and also academics that are researching the field so that it would be as bulletproof as possible. And of course, you always find things that you wish you had tested for in the course of this. But all of those pulled together, and then they helped send out the survey, both on emails and blogs, social media. And we were really pleased with the response we got. Over 1,000 people took it, 1,006 to be exact. They were a mix. One of the things that I had seen in leadership studies is that you focus on the board of trustees or you focus on the executive director's office. And I really believe leadership exists at all levels. So I really wanted to see what are the leadership within an organization, both perceptions and personal responsibility. So we looked at the board, we looked at CEO, We looked at the senior leader, which would be the chief financial officer, the chief development officer, chief operations officer. We looked at middle managers, staff members, and volunteers. And we got people from all those different options to respond. We had a really interesting mix of ages. We had about 14% millennial, 35% Gen X, no, 49% Gen X, a couple percent silent, and then 35% boomer, so there's just a nice mix in there. What surprised me the most was that most of the people had been in the nonprofit sector for over 7 years. So these weren't people that were on a honeymoon phase. These were people that knew the good, the bad, and the ugly about working in the nonprofit sector. And the organization sizes, you know, there were organizations, we thought $5 million in revenue was going to be a high end if you had over $5 million in revenue. We found out that wasn't enough. People were saying they had $35 million, they had $50 million, one said over $200 million budget. So we had a really healthy mix of everything under $1 million, which is, we know in the United States, 82% of nonprofits are under $1 million in revenue. So that's the bulk of it. But we had a really good representation of organizations of all sizes that filled out the report. We were pretty pleased with that.
So starting from a very solid foundation in this effort, that's really helpful and good to hear that it covers a span of different size organizations. Were there types of organizations in terms of organization types or segments?
There were all sorts. In the sector, when we did the sector, one of the things that I have found annoying, having been in healthcare philanthropy, when you put healthcare together as a hospital, it's different than a hospice or a visiting nurses association, but we're all lumped together in the same sector. So even though that bugged us about using that kind of question here, it does help with the NFTE stats and other things we'll be able to use, kind of slot these groups into it. So we had respondents from probably the top were from what would self-selected as human service, education, health, and then a smattering of religion, public or society benefit, environmental or animal, which is a interesting mix, but that's how NFTE does it. Foundations, international affairs, and then we did separate out public media because of some interest that we thought we were going to get with a group. And so we wanted to see how public broadcasting was doing that. That had been one of my clients that had really helped trigger this research too, and experience with them. So
that's helpful. Thank you. As I look, there was a quote that you made in the press release that says about the nonprofit leaders being surprised by the conflicting pressures on their time, which you mentioned just a short while ago there, but I like the visualization of the image of they tell us they feel they're building the bridge as they walk across it, and I think there are probably a lot of people out there listening who can relate in some level. So thank you for sharing that. What my next question really focuses on the results of the survey. So if you could share with us here and in the post, we will share the link so that people can go and get the entire survey. They can also look at the infographic, which gives a nice overview. Share with us what the key findings were and, you know, maybe point out anything that really shocked you, since you didn't have a particular, as you mentioned, you weren't skewing this a particular way to prove a point, but you were really interested in finding out the answers.
Yeah, thank you. Well, that was one of the shocking things to me was that we just wanted to look at basic organizational development. My master's degree is in organizational development. I've done surveys within this field. And so we just wanted to look at what are some practical common points that people consider acceptable organizational development: strategic planning, recruiting talent, retaining talent, communicating your vision, getting it out there, communicating it internally and externally with other communicators. And so I saw it at kind of an equal distribution of questions from different regions, and it felt like it was weighted correctly. What was surprising was how central having a strategic plan was in nonprofits that kept coming up with in the survey, which is very interesting. So what we found when we asked people, do you have a written strategic plan? Two out of three nonprofits said that they did. That kind of surprised me that one out of three is saying that they didn't right out of the gate. But when we plumbed a little deeper, it got a little bit more disturbing. When we asked, do you have a strategic plan in writing? There's about 19% or so that said they didn't have a strategic plan in writing. So anybody that's done any sort of leadership training or even leadership courses, a plan that's not in writing is just a wish. So, you know, there's a lot of strategic wishing going on maybe. And when you combine the people that didn't know if there was a strategic plan, the people that didn't have a plan in writing, and the people that just straight up said they didn't have a strategic plan, that works out to be about 49% of the people that responded saying, we're not operating with a strategic plan. That was really scary. It gives credence to the feeling that people said of, we're building the bridges, we go across it, or we're flying by the seat of our pants. It turns out the data shows that they really are. And although there's some often piety with the, well, we haven't been this way before, we're building bridges, we're going across it. My question to people that say that with pride is, well, what if you're headed to the wrong bank of the river? You know, what if you're going to go to the wrong spot on the river? What if there's like a cesspool on one spot of the river and a beautiful resort on the other? Wouldn't you want to build the bridge, depending on your mission, to one of them and make sure you're intentionally building it in the right way? That's what a strategic plan can do. So that was very interesting, surprising to us. Another thing that was surprising was one of the practitioners in California just said, could you ask also how many people have a fundraising plan with that strategic plan? And it was an incredible high percentage. There were 62% of the people that responded said they didn't have any fundraising plan as part of their strategic plan. Totally flabbergasted me. Again, it's a strategic wish. If you have a plan, part of a good organizational plan, whether it's business or not, is knowing what you want to accomplish, how you're going to fund it or resource it, and you know, how you're going to measure that and who you're going to communicate it to. So I was just flabbergasted by that. And then that was compounded by, we know that fundraising isn't the only way to resource things, right? You could collaborate. There's a wealth of, you know, stone soup. You can get everybody to pull a little bit together and accomplish your goals too. So another place we asked, how many, when you're creating your strategic plan, do you just even check in with other nonprofits, at least do an environmental scan to see what other nonprofits are doing? 70% of the respondents said, no, we don't do that. We don't check in with other nonprofits. So that was the most shocking thing, was the really lack of just basic common strategic planning, organizational development processes that are, I think when you look at a sector that is the third largest employer in the United States, when you look at a sector that's overseeing over $3 trillion in assets, when you look at a sector that has all the safety net features in a community and the life enhancers in every one of our communities, that's malfeasance on a grand scale. The report isn't intended to shame anyone, but it's just to say, wait a minute, this isn't right. And it doesn't have to be this way.
It's a very, that's a very loud wake up call. I'm just sitting here shaking my head as you were saying the 70% number. And that's a shame, because obviously, you know, partnerships, collaborations help everybody. I mean, we can all help each other rise. So that's an important, and that is shocking. So
yeah, and I'm not saying this in sort of I wish we could all hold hands and the world would have peace. It's not that we need to give up on our mission, but it's that we can more fully complete our mission, often in concert with others, and create things that we've never created before. And even if we choose not to go that way, we should at least be checking just to see
at least,
what's out there.
Right. If I cross a one-way street, I usually look on both directions, even if I...
Nice.
You know,
okay, so this is the other part. Well, yeah, that's a beautiful analogy. You know, board members know this when they're... When I do a board training, I go in and I say, thank you so much for being here. One thing you need to know is we are chosen as board members because we have a certain amount of wisdom or experience or skill set that the nonprofit sees as desirable. Unfortunately, what we tend to do is we walk through the door, put our worldly wisdom hat on the rack, sit around the table, make a bunch of stupid decisions for the nonprofit, feel good about it, pat ourselves on the back, and then go out decisions we never make for our own business. You know, we never enter into a business strategy without trying to figure out what's the exit plan or what's our goal. What do we want to get out of this? But we do that with nonprofits all the time, which the data shows. So part of the other thing that, you know, some of the other key findings I just found fascinating were 61% of nonprofit CEOs aren't even getting their performance reviewed by the board. So the CEO is not surprisingly, we almost didn't include a question on how confident are you about your leadership abilities, because the early reviewers of the survey said, this is just a throwaway question. Everybody's going to say hi. And there was, over 90%, like 95% of everybody that responded said, oh yeah, I get the abilities to move our thing forward, our nonprofit forward. And that didn't surprise us. But what surprised us was it's not based on reality. In a couple of areas. One, 61% of CEOs aren't getting their performance reviewed, and 42% of nonprofits don't have any formal mechanisms for performance evaluation of staff. But almost half of our nonprofits aren't even checking in to see if people are doing their job. That's craziness to me. But the other part of that is that when you look at the breakdown, the numbers a little bit more, which I'm really grateful for the Center for Sustainable Philanthropy and Rogari, their think tank out in UK, they helped me design the questions a little differently so that you could break some down. When you look at that confidence question, the people and break it between strategic plans and no strategic plans, the overwhelming confidence is in the people with strategic plans. The reduced confidence, the I feel somewhat confidence versus I feel very confident is
sure.
Exact opposite with the people that don't have a plan. So it only makes sense when you have a written plan and you know where you're going. You have a lot of the battles and a lot of the wording figured out so that you're all kind of singing off the same sheet. So the other, can I share one more just jaw dropping data analysis?
Absolutely.
Out of this? So the, you know, we've heard from Pew studies or Pew research that every day in the United States, and by and large, this was a North American study, over 80% of the people, over 90% of the people that gave any demographic information, which not everybody did, but over 90% of them that did were from North America, Canada, or United States. Although we had people from a host of really cool countries that participated as well. But we know in the United States, according to Pew, the 10,000 people, baby boomers, are reaching retirement age every day, every single day. They call it the silver tsunami. It's something I've been talking about when I teach generational cohorts and in different seminars that I give. So this isn't anything that's new. You can find headlines going back many years, and you can even find it from last fall with Rich Van saying, hey, leadership in the nonprofit, we need to wake up. This is something that we can do something about. It's not a legislative agenda that just whacks us out of the blue or an investigative reporter that surprises us on our doorstep. This is something that's demographically happening and we can plan. So when we put in there, do you have a succession plan? We even made the question softer. We said, do you have a succession plan or yes, leadership development program? I figured succession plan may be a little bit formal, but at least you're grooming leaders, right? We found that 77% of nonprofits that responded did not have one at all. Nothing. They're doing nothing to retain. And then there are, and another question, there's this real question of, we can't retain good, you know, more than a third of the people that responded said their turnover of their staff was high. And there was a quote later on in the report that says, we really have a hard time finding people to fill vacant positions. Well, is it any wonder if you're not developing leaders and you don't have, you don't know what your succession plan is, you're totally flying blind and kind of whistling in the storm. I mean, it's just, again, it's one of those crazy things where I think there are reasons for it, but it just shocked me that 77% of nonprofits don't have any kind of, not just the end plan, but development plan. Go ahead.
And don't you think that really good qualified candidates who interview with you and they discover, not you, but an organization that doesn't have a strategic plan, that doesn't have a succession plan in place, all of these pain points that you're pointing to, wouldn't a really great candidate find that out in the interview and just not be interested?
Well, I think that's exactly it. So what I think what has happened is And this is just a, you know, we took a snapshot. This is now moving into interpretation, but I think for a lot of nonprofits, they get started by well-meaning people that see a need and start filling it.
Mm-hmm.
And then as they start filling it, they draw people to themselves, and they're running on screech because they see this urgency and they need to get it fixed. And they draw people into their mm-hmm. wake that help them do that. And then they develop resources and stuff. And, you know, they do fundraising, not because they want to. That's not what they get into it for, but it helps get the whatever fix the problem that they see. And they develop this incredibly dysfunctional infrastructure around them that isn't well thought out at all. It's just based on adrenaline rush and urgency. And 30 years later, they're still running in that kind of, they haven't taken a step to just figure out, get in touch with the world. So, and you could see that. And one of the questions we asked is, what are the creative strategies you're doing to attract top talent without breaking your budget? And it was really embarrassing. What people put in there as creative strategies were things like, well, we offer benefits. You know, and my entire professional career for the last 20 years, offering benefits was a given of employment. You got some level of benefits. It wasn't if, it was how much. And so the fact that there's these people with a really good face, you have to take it on, you know, there's a lot of cynicism in a lot of the comments too, but that was in a different section. Yeah. People thought that, well, we offer benefits, or worse, it was, well, we can't compete. We hire people that are only committed to the mission. Well, that kind of self-righteous, holier-than-thou mentality just, well, that's fine, and you're going to go into extinction with that. I mean, that's
right.
That's what gets
you. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy that, right.
Nobody really cares. We're going to go out back and eat worms. And the more you say that, the more repulsive you become. Yeah. What's sad is I think there are some really strong causes and really great leaders that don't realize they're sabotaging themselves this way. Mm-hmm. They've been hurt. And so they kind of are, you know, they're trying to protect themselves with the, we only attract people to our mission. But there are certain things that they could do that would help them continue. If the life of their mission, their life's work was valuable enough to start and maintain, don't you think it would be valuable enough to keep going past their own employment experience when they retire, that the legacy would continue?
Yep.
And it doesn't have to
Absolutely.
Be just a startup. I mean, some of these startups are huge organizations. One out of five organizations with revenues of $5 million or more are operating without a strategic plan. So it's not just the small group. This is a sector-wide problem.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, absolutely. Mark, was there, this is a question based on what you were just talking about with the creative offerings, right, to attract talent. Mm. Did anybody give some good examples? I feel like being kind of negative. So I'm wondering if there were some good examples we could possibly highlight to share.
Definitely. Well, the data kind of suggested seven things that nonprofits could do, and that's in the report, and I'd be willing to go over them here. There are a couple of stories that cropped up that led me to want to do a follow-up. And in the report, I asked people, if you're excelling in one of these areas, could you send the Conquer Leadership Group your story, because we're collecting them. So there's an email, excelling@conquerleadershipgroup.com. to share those, because one of the stories was of a DC area nonprofit that their leader was given an award, and instead of keeping the award for himself, he split it up among his senior team and said, this is totally at your discretion to use for professional development, however you define that. I believe the original amount was $1,500. They had so much success with that, I mean, mm-hmm. first of all, to be that self-effacing as a leader, to be able to know that it was your team and share that, that's amazing to me. But then that was so successful, the board ended up hardwiring that in, as a line item in their budget. And it started over the years attracting the development directors and top HR directors and others from other organizations to their staff. And it was still only a few hundred dollars or $1,000 a year of discretionary money. It wasn't the only reason, but people that are interested in learning also provide mm-hmm. a fun culture to be part of. And if you're doing an important work, I mean, there's a lot of different things that have to be working in conjunction. But this was one interesting, good best practice that I think would be worth exploring. And it doesn't create a program. You could just evaluate it each year. You mm-hmm. could try it out, And one of my friends in a B corporation, so not in a nonprofit, but in a socially just for-profit, I guess you'd call it. It's called the B Corporation. Mm-hmm. He said they offer that and it attracts top talent and most of them don't use it. He doesn't understand why they don't, mm-hmm. but they're getting their own. When they know that they could get the training they need, if they felt it, they excel in their jobs anyway. It's just knowing that it's there if they need it. It's really shocking to me.
It is.
So that's one. Do we have time for one more?
We do. Yeah, go right ahead.
Okay. So one other really fascinating story that came out of it was I had asked the people that said that they regularly review KPIs, key performance indicators, or have dashboards. I had emailed them separately mm-hmm. and said, how are you doing that? And only two people responded. One was the person I just shared with you, and it wasn't really about dashboards. Mm-hmm. It was about something else. The other person that responded, the dashboards had just been started, and so there wasn't a system yet. But the story she told me next was the story that just made me so glad for the conversations that this report is starting. She had just moved to another nonprofit in the Southeast from after years in the nonprofit sector. And they had just hired an executive director. Now, this executive director had made a shift in his career to actually look at raising up leaders. And for whatever reason, some leaders never make that shift. They feel like it really has to be about them and their reputation. But there's others that are willing. There's a different makeup in their character or maturity or something happens where they're able to be a little bit more vulnerable to some key individuals. And you wouldn't want to do this for everyone. But he turned to the associate director at his organization and one other person, but particularly the associate director. And he made an intentional effort to invite her into every meeting that normally only the executive director would be in. He had her at the table. He would debrief with her after how did you think the meeting went? What do you think would you have done differently? When key decisions came up, he was asking her, what's your input? What's the decision you'd make? And then if he chose a different decision, he would still respectfully agree to disagree, but he'd explain his reasons for doing that. And any of us that have led anything know that the view is different from the captain's chair. It looks, you make decisions that don't seem to make sense until you're in the captain's mm-hmm. chair and you're like, oh, I didn't know that it looked this way from here. So he did this, and shockingly, 18 months after he was hired, he unexpectedly passed away. But the nonprofit's
wow.
mission never skipped a beat. They could go through their morning and all, but they had this person right mm-hmm. up to task. And even if we're just for an interim period, the kind of the,
wow,
the,
yeah.
of the story is that this person was hired. They were both neck and neck when the hiring came. They both knew that she almost beat him out for the job. So there was potential for even more friction there, but it didn't, because of their working together, that friction never manifested in the culture. And even more so when he was no longer there to no longer here, they were able to go on without missing a beat, even while mourning and doing all the right things that humans, that was emotionally
right.
correct. Yeah, so
wow.
there's going to be a lot more good stuff coming out of this, Amy. I'm so excited for that, and I want to collect those stories
yeah.
because the snapshot does show, okay, it's the X-ray. Yep, there are problems in this structure. And there's seven steps about what do you do first with a strategic plan? Well, you write it down. And then you start kind of communicating it, checking it at least quarterly, which most nonprofits aren't doing. Then you can start doing cascading goals, which your listeners will love to look at in the report. It brings all the goals, instead of being conflicting demands from various interest groups, it's a way of trying to bring integrity to the organization so that everybody's kind of mm-hmm. pulling in the same direction. You can look at how you're telling your story. You can look at succession planning. There's a comment about how to even do a nascent development, leadership development program. So there's a lot in this, in the data that brings to the fore, that suggests best practices in our next mm-hmm. iteration. Right now, we're just thrilled to be getting this out and thrilled that we could talk to you on the day it was officially released. As we move forward and more nonprofits, continue to work with this and board members too, we're going to be collecting some outliers that are doing a really good job so that nonprofits could consider, hey, does that fit for my culture? Could I be that kind of leader that would bring in the executive director, the assistant director, even though mm-hmm. she's going to not necessarily agree with me. Yeah, it's an exciting time to be in the nonprofit world. That's for sure.
Oh, wow. That the story about losing the executive director, and, you know, fortunately, that was the type, he was the type of person who helped elevate, right, his staff and was mm-hmm. training and was not guarding that information. Some people, as you know, prefer to keep information as sort of their security blanket and not right. share it with others. So that was brilliant of him. And I just think that the story, that's terribly sad that he passed. But if anyone out there listens and takes that as their litmus test, I guess, for their organization, what would happen to, you know, if today your CEO was gone, your executive director just left? Who would be, how long would it take you to be up and running? That's very eye-opening. And it's a,
and what I think about the report, what I'm glad about the data is I think it'll arm people to have those tough conversations.
Right.
You and I have been around the sector enough to know that these problems aren't going to go away without some uncomfortable conversations. And it's going to be some, so hopefully this will be some of the data that will arm people, leaders, to have those conversations and not make it about personalities. Often when we talk about leadership,
yeah.
it is about personality. I don't like the way you did that to me. I don't like, you know, or mm-hmm. Are you just trying to push me out of my position when you talk about succession planning? And it's not that at all. It's about the data, and it's about stewarding the vision and the mission until this problem is gone and it doesn't need to be addressed anymore. What are the ways that we're going to keep it resourced and moving forward, regardless of who's in the director's chair?
That is fabulous. I hope all the folks out there listening and will be sharing this report with others too. And as Mark suggested, you know, this study provides you with the data, the numbers, the statistics, the fact back, you know, the backup to have those conversations. And they don't have to be terribly uncomfortable. Have them over a drink or a cup of coffee.
Sure.
But it is. I know you were just joking, but it's, you know, it is a conversation that needs to be taking place in any organization that wants to continue serving its mission. So I can't thank you enough for sharing this with us. The file of this will be embedded in the post, and anybody can share it on Twitter or, you know, through social as well. So I encourage you guys to share this and help reach out further than even our audience. And for those of you listening who, for some reason, keep thinking of a red bow tie in their mind, you are correct. Mark Pittman is known by many of us very well as the fundraising coach. And that, you know, that just kind of begs the question, Mark, can you tell what made you get involved with Concord? What was the impetus to that?
Well, really, just to be brief about it, I've always been about leadership. And when I got into coaching, I knew that fundraising was centered on leadership. It was any fundraiser out there listening to this knows that you can't, it's incredibly hard to fundraise with poor leadership, weak leadership, no vision. We're often the ones that are creating the vision or a sense of strategic plan when there's a vacuum of that from the board or from the executive director. So for me, this is a natural outgrowth. Over the last 5 years, I've had more and more people hiring me for helping with employees satisfaction or helping set up leadership development programs or trying to figure out how does the board work together. And they were saying to me, we're hiring you despite your being fundraising coach. We understand the fundraising coach part, but they were saying, we see the leadership, the executive coaching in you and the training. We want that at our organization. And so we helped CEOs of the unionized labor force that were sending poison pen letters to the board, help that to turn that around and increase their employee participation by double digits in a year. So we've been able to do some pretty creative things, and it's just a natural outgrowth. Fundraising coach is still going to be there. Nonprofitacademy.com still going to be there. But this is another way that we can serve the sector more robustly in ways that often board members and executive directors think that fundraising is something they've subcontracted out to the development director. And so we're able to now have those conversations and advocate for the people that we've been talking to for the last 20 years. You know, that development director actually needs to be at the board meeting and hearing, at least hearing some of the vision stuff that the board's doing, not just getting inflicted with that with the next day. Mm-hmm. you know, I've had board members come to my door when I was a development director. Well, I heard you're going to raise another $100,000. And you have to learn to lie and fake it and like, oh, yeah, I knew that was coming, instead of looking shocked like you didn't know and throwing your boss under the bus. So this Concert Leadership Group is now Overseas Fundraising Coach and Nonprofit Academy, and it's a more full growth of my master's in organizational leadership, the work that the network I've been able to just wonderfully, you know, grow over the last couple 20 years. That's really, I'm feeling old when I said that. And also the, you know, my Franklin Covey executive coach certification. And this is what I love to do, is help leaders lead.
Well, it definitely shows. And we thank you for the amount of, I mean, this report, and for all of your dedication and work in the sector. Just before we go, what I'd like to just remind everybody is that the entire survey results, the report, is available. And Mark, where should everybody go? Where would you like them to go to download the report?
The easiest place is to go right to ConcordLeadershipGroup.com/report.
Okay.
And you can put in your email and your first name, and then it'll take you right to the page where you can download everything.
Excellent. All right. So that's right. It's ConcordLeadershipGroup.com/report, and get your free report. And it is hot off the presses, if there were still presses. thank you so much. I am so excited about this. Thank you for your time. Thank all of you for listening and sharing. And we hope that you're going to go forward and take this information and use it to better your organization and your own responsibilities as well, and have those conversations. So thanks so much, everybody. Look forward to seeing you all soon. Take care.